जया गोपी जन भालाभा गिरिभरा धारी जया गोपी जन भालाभा गिरिभरा धारी जशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना जशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना जमुना तीरा बनचारी जमुना तीरा बनचारी जया राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जया राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जयं विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्रीमद् हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जयं विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्रीमद् हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज शिल प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की इस्कोन फाउंडर आचार्य शिल प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथरा श्रीमन भागवतान की इताई गौर प्रेमनंदी ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरिस टू शिशि गुरु वंशी गौरंग ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय With reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 13, The Behavior of a Perfect Person, text number 43. Vikalpan juhu jachchitau tammanasyarta vibhrame manovaikarike hutva tammajajam juhotyanu vikalpan juhu jachchitau tammanasyarta bibhrame manovaikarike hutvau tammajajam juhotyanu vikalpan juhu jachchitau tammanasyarta bibhrame manovaikarike hutva tanmaya janjuhotyanu. Please chant. विकल्पं जुहुचित्तौ Vikalpam, discrimination between good and bad, one person and another, one nation and another, and all similar discrimination. Juhujat, one should offer as oblations. Chittau, in the fire of consciousness. Tam, that consciousness. Manasi, in the mind. Artabhi Brahme, the root of all acceptance and rejection. Manaha, that mind. Vaikarike, in false ego, identification of oneself with matter. Hutva, offering as oblations. Tam, this false ego. Mayayam, in the total material energy. Juhoti, offers as oblations. Anu, following this principle. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The mental concoction of discrimination between good and bad should be accepted as one unit and then invested in the mind, which should then be invested in the false ego. The false ego should be invested in the total material energy. This is the process of fighting false discrimination. Purport. This verse describes how a yogi can become free from material affection. Because of material attraction, a karmi cannot see himself. Jnanis can discriminate between matter and spirit. But the yogis, the best of whom are the bhakti yogis, want to return home, back to Godhead. The karmis are completely in illusion. The jnanis are neither in illusion nor in positive knowledge. But the yogis, especially the bhakti yogis, are completely on the spiritual platform. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 14:26, Mancho yobhya vicharena bhakti yogena shevate sagunam samatityaitam brahma bhujaja kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down under any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. End of quote. Thus, a devotee's position is secure. A devotee is at once elevated to the spiritual platform. Others, such as jnanis and hatha yogis, can only gradually ascend to the spiritual platform by nullifying their material discrimination on the platform of psychology and nullifying the false ego, by which one thinks, I am this body, a product of matter. One must merge the false ego in the total material energy and merge the total material energy into the supreme energetic. This is the process of becoming free from material attractions. Vikalpan yuhuja chittao tan manasyartabhi brahme mano vaikarike hutva tan mayayam yuhotyanu. The mental concoction of discrimination between good and bad should be accepted as one unit and then invested in the mind, which should then be invested in the false ego. The false ego should be invested in the total material energy. This is the process of fighting false discrimination. Om Agyana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Umilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Persaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Shatarine Bancha Kalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhubhyaivacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So there you have it. That's the process of fighting false discrimination. So good luck. We hearing from the sage who is narrating or explaining to Prahlad Maharaj his own process to become self-realized in his whole experience. So he's explaining the whole experience, the whole process completely. And we see that there is it's a very arduous, difficult process. Just this in itself, for a common person, is something beyond comprehension. So, what we have to do is take our process of discrimination and invest it, make it one and invest it into the mind. So go and figure. And then do that and invest it into the false ego. And then do that, once you invest it in the false ego, you have to merge that into the total material energy. And then you have it. You will be able to achieve. So, this is not a simple process. But that's what we're supposed to, achieve. We're supposed to be able to become free from this material, you know, it's material world. So anyway, let's analyze everything. So we have here that the Sanskrit says this mano, what is it? Yeah. Manasyarta vibrame, that the mind, this process of discrimination between good and bad, or some person and another person, this process of the word that is used here is vikalpan. And we hear that the mind has these two functions, sankalpa and vikalpa. Sankalpa means that you accept, vikalpa means that you reject. So these are things that are a part of the functions of the mind. And it is also explained, we hear in the scriptures, that when we are in this condition by this material world, then we basically riding the mind. So the mind is described as the mano ratena. Mano ratena means the chariot of the mind. So it's like Ratha Yatra, you know. Ratha means chariot. So we've been carried by the mind, and the mind is simply accepting and rejecting, going to this process of accepting and sankalpa and vikalpa. Sometimes we accept something, and maybe some down the road we decide that we have to reject, and so on. So how the mind is controlled, Krishna explains in the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that higher than the mind is the intelligence, and higher than the intelligence is the ego. So by intelligence, we have the capacity to choose. The intelligence is able to make a choice. The mind is in this business of accepting and rejecting. So, and the intelligence, we choose. Oh, this is good. No, that's not good. Like that. The intelligence, then, have a very, very important function. And the intelligence depends on the ego. So, in the material condition, when we, you know, when the spirit, when the living entity comes into the material world, then the living entity is covered by what is called the ahamkara, or the false ego. So the living entity, in this condition of being absorbed with this misconception of the self, the false ego, things that we're the product of matter with this material. I'm this material body, and therefore he start to try to lord over the material energy like that. So that's a false ego. So the false ego affects the intelligence, and then the intelligence, under the influence of the false ego, becomes what is called the Abhishuddha Buddhayo. Abhishuddha means impure, polluted. Polluted intelligence. So, with polluted intelligence, then what happens? The choices are they're topsy-turvy. There's no proper discrimination. There's no proper discrimination what is good or bad. It's basically being influenced by the most of material nature. And this is something that is explained. I found a verse, very nice one. Yeah, this is also Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj was explaining that I read the translation. This is chapter 7, text 27. Prahlad Maharaj says, through polluted intelligence, one is subjected to the modes of nature, and thus one is conditioned by material existence. Like a dreaming state in which one falsely suffers, material existence, which is due to ignorance, must be considered unwanted and temporary. So the root of a polluted intelligence is ignorance, which is the false ego being covered by ignorance. The living entity becomes covered by ignorance. And that's what causes the false ego. Ignorance of the self. So due to ignorance, and this, the key for becoming free from this misidentification becomes the purification of your intelligence. So it becomes a very, very important aspect in the elevation or the emancipation of the living entity from this material condition. And thus, we see that the whole scheme of the Bhagavad Gita is based on this premise, that Arjuna, his intelligence becomes bewildered by identifying himself with the body. And then, when he comes to understand that he can choose, he can make a choice, what is the right thing to do, what is dharma, what is a dharma, then Krishna instructs. He surrenders to Krishna and Krishna instructs him. And then the first thing that Krishna instructs him is to actually straight up what is the real identity of the soul. So the first part of the Bhagavad Gita is this Atma, what is it called? The Atma Tattva. So from text 11 to text 20 something, I can't remember. That whole part explains the truth about the soul, the difference between the body and the soul. But then Krishna goes and tells Arjuna that so far he has given Arjuna a very, very analytical instructions on the nature of the self. But now he's going to explain to him this process by which you can understand, you have the capacity to make the choices based on transcendental knowledge, not based on illusion or ignorance. So he says to Arjuna, from text 39, now listen. He say, Esha ti bihita shankye budhir joge tu iman srinu budha yukto yaya parta karma bandhan prahasyasi. So srinu, this word is important, just listen. Pay attention and listen. Because he's going to explain a process that is called Buddhi Yoga. Buddhi means intelligence. So bhakti, devotional service, when Krishna, he equates the term bhakti yoga to Buddhi Yoga. And the basis of the premise of this process of Buddhi Yoga or bhakti yoga is that will allow you to become free from this conditioned life, this material life. Krishna says, thus far I have described this knowledge to you through analytical study. Now listen as I explain in terms of working with our fruitive resolve, O son of Prita. When you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. So, Buddhi Yoga, basically, you take the activities of the intelligence based on knowledge. And then you are in the path of devotional service. You can free you're in the path of liberating yourself from the influence of the modes of nature. And Krishna described that so there's a distinction between choosing there is these two different types of persons in this material world, and there's a clear distinction and that Krishna makes, and in the scripture is made. There is the materialist and there is the transcendentalist. So those are two types of persons. The materialists, they're called karmis. And, you know, there are, the materialists are called karmis. And the transcendentalists are of three types, according to Srila Prabhupada explains this. Transcendentalists are the jnanis, the yogis, and the bhaktas. So, the materialists, the karmis, they're caught in this manoratena, which is basically mental concoctions. You try to figure it out and make choices according to the dictations of the mind. The intelligence is controlled by the mind. The mind is controlled by the senses. So everything is topsy-turvy. Like that. Krishna explains that the senses are, the mind is higher than the senses, the intelligence is higher than the mind, the ego is higher than intelligence. But in the conditional state, the senses dictate, the mind is actually pushed by the senses. The intelligence is completely bewildered and that's just, you know, okay, just goes along with it. And the poor soul in this misidentification state is for a horrible ride. We see the painting of the soul being taken into this chariot drawn by these five crazy horses that have no control, because it is explained that the senses are like horses, the five horses. And the mind is the reins. And the intelligence is the driver who holds the reins. And the soul is the passenger who's been taken in this chariot. So when the intelligence is bewildered, he doesn't have a hold of the reins. So the reins is being completely, you know, flapping in the air. So it's all controlled by the senses. Whatever this horse wants to take the poor passenger, that's where it's going to go. So then in the conditional states, the materialistic person, then according to the modes of nature, is going to choose what is good and what is bad. And those who are in the mode of goodness, they follow religious principles. So we see that there is a whole portion, actually the majority of the portion of the scriptures tell us how you can, you know, fulfill your material desires in a regulated way according to religious principles. So you have a very clear distinction in, you know, according to the scriptures, that there is activities that are pious and activities that are impious. So we have what is called karma and vikarma. So karma are activities that are material activities that are sort of directed and under the regulations of religious principles. Vikarma are activities that are completely ignoring religious principles, that are not according to the scriptures. Karma elevates one to a better material position. Vikarma degrades one to a very, very abominable position. So this is going on. So, you know, within this material sphere, then there is choice, what is good and what is bad, pious and impious, you know, punya and pap, so sinful and pious. And so a karmi is one who is looking to upgrade his position to a better material situation. So you want to elevate yourself to the heavenly planets. And so this process is going on. So you follow the karmakanda power of the Vedas, and you elevate yourself to a higher position, and you try to remain yourself, you know, in this pious space, you know. But then what happens is that you see that even demigods fall down from those positions. Sometimes we see demigods that they're sent to be trees, and some demigods sent to be, you know, a peak, and some demigods they sent to be, you know, you become different in different conditions. Some become demons, some become rakshasas, we see that all over the scriptures. So it's not a secure position. You can elevate yourself to a very, very amazing material situation in the heavenly planets, but you can very much fall down from that. And in fact, it's meant to fall down, because it's like that. So that is that position of choosing, discriminating with a polluted intelligence, with an intelligence that is influenced by ignorance. So Krishna makes a distinction. Then there is the intelligence of the transcendentalists. The intelligence of the transcendentalists is that now the transcendentalists can discriminate what is matter and what is spirit. So that is the common ground of the different transcendentalists. And the mind, or the intelligence of the materialist, Krishna describes as many-branched. The term that Krishna uses, bahushaka. Bahushaka, the buddhayo vyavishajinam, that the intelligence of those who are irresolute, who can take the path of buddhi yoga, is bahushaka, many branched, meaning that it's pulled all over by the material desires. The intelligence of the transcendentalist ekeha is single-pointed. And what the transcendentalist looks for is to become free from this material existence. So that is the single-pointed goal of the transcendentalists. The transcendentalists come to understand that this material world is just a dream. It doesn't exist. Actually, there's a very wonderful verse. It's in the teachings of third chapter, Incarnation of the Lord. Kapila Dev. Thank you. Kapila Dev. He describes the characteristics of intelligence. And Prabhupada's purpose is completely amazing. Because, you know, intelligence have this particular function. And when its intelligence is governed by transcendental knowledge, those functions will act, you know, towards, you know, transcendence, towards becoming free from this material world. And when it's influenced by ignorance, the same thing will actually just take you down. So Kapila Dev says, is that the characteristic of intelligence? Doubt, misapprehension, correct apprehension, memory, and sleep are determined by the different functions. As determined by the different functions, are said to be the distinct characteristics of intelligence. So, intelligence have this correct. Doubt, misapprehension, correct apprehension, memory, and sleep. Now, Prabhupada explains. Doubt, and read the purport. Doubt is one of the important functions of intelligence. Blind acceptance of something does not give evidence of intelligence. Therefore, the word samsaya is very important. In order to cultivate intelligence, one should be doubtful in the beginning. The doubting is not very favorable when information is received from the proper source. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, doubting the words of the authority is the cause of destruction. So, Arjuna was doubtful, you know, but his doubt was to try to understand. The purpose of his doubt was to try to understand Krishna's instruction. He didn't doubt Krishna. He doubts his comprehension. So he wants to understand. So the intelligence is working there. But, you know, the premise is that Arjuna have accepted, you know, a proper authority. Like that. So, as described in the Patanjali Yoga system, Pramana, Viparyaya, Vikalpa, Nidra Smritya, by intelligence only can one can understand things as they are. By intelligence only one can understand whether or not he is the body. The study to determine whether one's identity is spiritual or material begins in doubt. When one is able to analyze his actual position, the false identification with the body is detected. This is viparyasa. When false identification is detected, then real identification can be understood. Real understanding is described here as nishchaya, or proved experimental knowledge. This experimental knowledge can be achieved when one has understood the false knowledge. By experimental or proved knowledge, one can understand that he is not the body, but the spirit soul. So this misapprehension is that the intelligence can sort of analyze that, wait a second, this identification with the body is not right. You know, so you understand the misapprehension. So now, what is the correct apprehension? I'm a spirit soul. So to get to that, you go to certain experiential things. So this is all through the intelligence. And then Prabhupada goes to say the memory and sleep. Smriti means memory. And swapa means sleep. Sleep is also necessary to keep the intelligence in working order. If there is no sleep, the brain cannot work nicely. In Bhagavad Gita, it is especially mentioned that persons who regulate eating, sleeping, and other necessities of the body in the proper proportion become very successful in the yoga process. These are some of the aspects of the analytical study of intelligence as described in both the Patanjali Yoga system and the Sankhya philosophy system of Kapila Dev in Srimad Bhagavatam. So Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita basically is taking us to give us a process to make the choices based, you know, on transcendental knowledge, on the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like that. And then by doing that, even if we are in a conditioned state, by just doing these choices according to transcendental knowledge, then we're in the process of becoming free. So another important part of this verse is in Prabhupada's purport, he explained that the only ones who are going to be successful in becoming free from this material condition are the devotees. Now, remember that we say that there is three types of transcendentalists. There is the jnanis, there is the yogis, and there is the bhaktas. Prabhupada explains that the jnanis, they absorb from the verse in the tadbidhi paripratenat, no, what is it? No, vadanti tat tatas vidam, tat jnan, what is it? How it goes? Tat vadanti tat tatang vidas. Brahmeti paramameti bhagavan iti sabdhyate. So, that the absolute truth is understood in these three different aspects. Brahmeti paramameti bhagavan. Brahma, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And the jnanis are absorbed in understanding the impersonal feature of the Lord. The yogis, they try to understand the partial manifestation of the Lord as the super soul. And the bhaktas fully understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you have to come to the position of bhakta in order to be able to complete your path of becoming free from the material world. The other path of transcendentalism is progressive, but they will remain in the material world until they come to the position of bhakti. That is explained by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita. dat bahunam jammana ante gyanavan mam prapadyante. That when you come to the end of jnana, when you come to the end of knowledge, then what happened? Then you surrender to Krishna. You understand Krishna's position. Vasudeva sarvam iti. That Krishna is supreme. That Krishna is everything. And so you have to come to that position. Otherwise, you know, it takes many lives. And that's what we hear from the sage. What we hear from the sage is the process that is a progressive process that will take you there. Krishna says that in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita when Arjuna asks, which one is superior? The bhakta or the jnani? And Krishna says the bhakta is superior. But the jnani, he will get there. He will achieve liberation in due course. But the path of the jnani, and Prabhupada includes here the yogi that is not the bhakti yogi, is very difficult. It's arduous. It's long. Bahunan ante thousands of lives. So the sage, we hear, he described, you know, different life he have to take, you know, of going through different situations and then, you know, coming to this position to finally, you know, renouncing completely the material world and material activities and focusing simply in his devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so the explanation is there. As long as one does not come to the position of worshiping the Supreme Lord, then again you have to come to this material. You remain in the material world. A famous verse Prabhupada called that for those transcendentalists that they're in the path of liberation, they're actually not liberated. They're not liberated, they're liberated only in their mind. The verse is Yenyera Vindaksha Bimukta Maninas. Bimukta means Bimukta Maninas, being the liberation only happens in their mind. And why is that? Tvayi ashta baba avishuddha buddhaya. The intelligence is polluted still. Avishuddha buddhaya. And aruhyo krichena padam padantata padanti ato nadrita jushman angrayaha. That because they haven't taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, then even if they achieve the position of merging into Brahman, they still have to come down. They still have to come down. So the position of being a devotee is the only safe position. The position of taking full shelter of Krishna is the only safe position. And that's what Krishna says to Arjuna, that even a small advancement that will save you. So it's the right path. And we simply have to purify our intelligence by following Krishna's instructions. And that is the whole process of devotional service as taught in the Bhagavad Gita. So we following is pretty much tailored for us. So I stop here and then open for questions and yeah. Jai Baladev.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. You had a lot of nice points. I want to refer to the point and maybe you can answer a question or comment on what I'm about to say. Basically, you were mentioning polluted intelligence. We're referring to polluted intelligence. So that's basically the basis of my commentary and question. So we see in the scriptures that, let's just say, for example, like the Kauravas or anyone, Ramachandra, all the villains in the scriptures, they'll definitely say, I don't have polluted intelligence. And we could see that all the great saints like Haridasa Thakura, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan, all of them, they'll say, I have polluted intelligence. And so one example that I appreciated, actually that came to me, because we hear that we should learn, take lessons from everything, even though this is not maybe a palatable example, but it's one that kind of vividly expresses this point. I'm sure everyone can relate to this, especially on festival days or Sunday feasts. I'm sure. So when somebody uses the bathroom, number two, then they come out the bathroom, then you go in there and you're like, you can't tolerate the smell, obviously. But the ironic thing about that part is that we could tolerate our own smell. We like, there's no big difference. So the lesson I got from that is from one devotee who mentioned this point is that we could tolerate the smell of our own crap, but we can't tolerate anyone else's crap. And we could see that in the scriptures. So my question is that when we talk about polluting intelligence or discriminating, how do we know, for example, that, let's say, for example, like we hear in the scriptures, you know, Vishwasura, externally he was a demon, but he was actually a devotee. Or the prostitute, she became purified by Haridasa Thakura, and if she was speaking on the Vyasa sign, we wouldn't want to listen to her. Or Jagamadai, Lord Chaitanya said, I purified them of all their sins. He told the Vaishnava community, don't treat them like they're sinners, treat them like normal saintly Vaishnavas. Now, that would be very difficult for us to do. So my question is, how do we know, for example, basically, when we say, you should listen to me and not this other Vaishnava, how do we know it's not coming from a platform of honor and recognition? How do we know it's our clear intelligence? And also, what can we do, like, because we hear that Prabhupada, when he first came here, he was trying to encourage all his god brothers. You know, he was their ever well-wisher. And so that's one thing I really appreciate about the saints is that we can't judge anyone's conscience, we can only judge our. So how important is it to be a well-wisher of everyone in body, mind, and words? We may not necessarily agree with them, but also prayers help in being a well-wisher. So those kind of two aspects of the question that how do we know when we ask people to discriminate, how do we know that's not coming from a platform of our own ego of wanting to be recognized and listened to? And also, how important is it to be a well-wisher of everyone in body, mind, and words? Okay, maybe I'm not disagreeing, I could be misjudging them, but I'm hoping the best for them. I'm their well-wisher. So can you answer that question?
There was few points and questions, you know. So first one that I wanted to comment is that in one sense, you know, devotees are, you know, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada's followers, then many of us with very, you know, difficult backgrounds are able to, you know, sit in the Vyasasan and speak. Or even, you know, being appreciated by the community of devotees. You know, and it's something that I think most of the devotees experience, that we don't look too much, we're not so concerned too much about the past of the devotees. I mean, it's not important. We're very much appreciated of the person, the present person, who is, you know, who is a rare soul among the millions that are there. Here's one devotee, you know, who comes to sincerely try to perform some service to the deities and like that. Like last night when I was sitting on the, you know, on the kirtan of Jagannath Prabhu, amazing kirtan, then the devotees came to the front the congregation, and the curtains were closing, and you can see the devotees were trying to take that last look, like last darshan of Kishore Kishori. And it was very touching. I mean, these are devotees of the Lord. I mean, one sees in the street and may think, oh, well, you know, this person is, you know, not so devoted. Come on. I mean, there was such a sincere sort of like expressions of devotion and love, of trying, you know, to take that last darshan. You know, people were all moving and the curtains were closing and they were moving as a closed, you know, to take that last darshan. You know, it was very touching. I thought, you know, I really appreciated it, you know, and think, you know, we're fortunate to be surrounded by the devotees of the Lord. And, you know, so that in itself I don't think most of the devotees have that problem. And if we find ourselves getting into trying to criticize devotees for whatever, you know, past they have, is that is condemned. That's not good. And we've been warned that don't go in that space because it can also destroy your Krishna consciousness. So, in other words, just to answer your questions, we have to discriminate about, you know, in our level that we are aspiring devotees. We've been trained to be devotees. We're still affected by our material condition. We're not free yet. So in our position to be safe, we've been given rules and regulations. When we advance in the process of bhakti, there will be a moment in which rules and regulations are not so necessary because now it's spontaneous. But while we are conditioned, we need rules and regulations. What is rules and regulations but, you know, a list of do's and don'ts? So it tells very clearly that, you know, what we choose, the chosen. So the intelligence, the activities of the intelligence are already, you know, put to us like in a chart. You know, this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is bad. That's what Srila Rupa Goswami does in the Nectar of Devotion and the Nectar of Instructions. He gave us rules and regulations. Srila Sanatana Goswami gave us, you know, a whole list of rules and regulations to worship the deities. So we follow that. Srila Sanatana Goswami in the Hari Bhakta Vilas, he described all the different nuances of how we relate among devotees. And so we becoming educated and we learn to follow the rules and regulations, and that's a safe position. If we get out of that, then it means that we're doing the manoratena stuff in speculation. We're just, you know, making choices according to my sankalpa and vikalpa, my mind. Accepting and rejecting, oh, this devotee, oh, you know, oh, this one is good, oh, this one is bad, like that. We have to understand that we're in the process of becoming educated, and we have to be educated. You know, like when you go to university, you go with a purpose of being educated in a particular path, and you know, then ekeha. You know, your intelligence becomes, you know, ekeha kurunandana, becomes single pointed. And then, you know, we're safe. Any other comment or questions? Krishna Arjun.
Let me try and articulate this. You had mentioned that the false ego is higher than the intelligence, and you'd also brought up that the one category of yogis, the jnanis, that it's only in the mind that they perceive themselves being liberated from the material conditioning. So, and in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that that category of yogis don't have knowledge, but also they're not in illusion. So the question would be, if the idea of liberation on the part of those yogis is in the mind, that would almost imply that there is some illusion. So
this one.
It would imply that there is some illusion. So maybe the question is, is it that the false ego, or whatever's in the false ego, is what's causing the problem, that even though they're supposed to be free from illusion, they now appear to be illusioned, even imagining or thinking that they're free from material conditioning? So that's the question.
Yeah, we hear Prabhupada saying the last snare of illusion, that even when you come to that position of understanding that, you know, I'm not part of matter, I'm a spirit soul, then the last snare of illusion is, okay, yeah, you're a spirit soul, you're God. So then you're back to square number one. So you're, you know, square number one was, you know, I want to be God. That's what brings us to the material world. So that's where still the Abhisuddha Buddha, yeah, the intelligence is still polluted, because it's an incomplete understanding. That's what Prabhupada explains, that the Brahman realization and the Paramatma realizations are not complete. They're incomplete. So so it's not a secure position. You're not still free, so you can be affected. For the jnani, it takes many lives to experience, you know, those fall downs, even for the yogis too. And the yogis, you know, you can see, I mean, because they're transcendentalists, still progressive. We have the examples of, you know, the famous powerful yogis that fell down from their meditation. You know, two that come to mind, Vishramitra Muni and Sauvari Muni, that they were disturbed in the meditation and they got married, you know. Sauvari Muni got married with whatever, or I think eight daughters of the king or something, or ten or something. So some good amount of girls, you know, princesses. And Vishramitra, he got disturbed by one of the heavenly damsels, you know, that Indra sent. And after a while, he was completely disgusted by the whole thing. So, you know, he just was, how in the world did I give up my position like that? And then he was double determined, you know. So it's not secure. It happens. You can fall down from that position. But, you know, they're transcendentalists, so it's a progressive. They're, you know, at least you come to the position of understanding the difference between matter and spirit. The jnani has that, and the yogi has that. So that in itself is way up there. And Krishna says eventually they all will come back to him. It's a bona fide path, and that's what we more or less reading in this, you know, perfect, you know, social structures. They were leading to actually, you know, this gradual path that it will take you there. It will take you to the end. But it's very difficult. It's long. And just to add to the appreciation, what we given is the elevator right onto the steps. The process of devotional service, as given by Krishna, is like, you know, a express elevator, one of those, you know. So you're able to elevate yourself to, you know, the position of what everybody after many, many lives just come. That answer, sort of. All right, Prabhuji, give the phone. Get the microphone for you.
You have the body and the mind and the intelligence and the ego and then spirit, and that the ego is the same as personality of the individual, and that's the soul. Mm. And that's the soul being concocted through many lifetimes of imagination and speculation pollutes the intelligence. But at the essence of every being is spirit or Krishna. Is that correct?
Yeah. The spirit soul is who we are.
And personality.
The ego, yeah, and the ego is just is a word that says, you know, your identification. So, you know, if you have the right ego, it's when you're identifying to who you are. A false ego is when you misidentify and identify yourself with something that you're not. So, you know, that means it's a position of a bit of, you know, like a mad position. You know, I am Napoleon. Right? Napoleon, his right hand of the left.
So the false ego can travel from lifetime to lifetime, many incarnations of as long as until we do something about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Basically, we're misidentifying ourselves with the different bodies that we're given. You know, and that dictates the rest. You know, comes down, you know, from that. That's what is called avidya or ignorance, ignorance of the self. Jitendra Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada says that hardly anybody really wants to go back to the spiritual world. They're just, you know, they bounce from one mode of nature to the other. And then he says we should find the enemy of, you know, and the enemy is lust and where it resides in the mind, the intelligence, and the senses.
Yeah.
And so he says we should see things, you know, in their category, and then we can really see.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
Thank you, Guru. Okay, we can finish here. Garantarashiman Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Premanand.